I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Wrestling fans, it is I, CM2 with the world, here with a brand new episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 30, yes, we've made it all the way to 30, and on this episode, it's time, it's the back half of this episode, it's time to look at the end of days. It's time to realize that the end is near. It's time to look at the pay-per-view known as Armageddon. And this time out, we're taking a look at the time that hell took place in a cell. The time where five men entered, but only one came out. The WWF Champion. I'm, of course, talking about Armageddon 2000. Headlined by the six men entered in a six-man Hell in a Cell for the WWF Championship, which I hear is one of Matty J's favorites. Speaking of which, I don't usually pimp stuff this early in the show, but on December 29th, so this was recorded before then, the final episode of the WrestleCast, the year in review, will drop. It's a massive one. I'm a part of it, which is why I'm pimping it now. Go and check it out. Not that you need to hear me pimp it to know to check it out. But check it out. You know, my God, we had a lot of fun on that that night. So, and, you know, surprises abound all throughout that podcast. So, check that out on December 29th. It's going to drop on Podomatic, the WrestleCast, the final episode of the year. Back to this, we really don't have any news or anything to really talk about wrestling-wise, or nothing that I feel is important, you know, just the usual rumors and everything, stuff that, you know, you can hear talked about on other podcasts, because, like I said, when I talk about news, I try to tend to, it has to be really, really important, or because I feel it does somewhat match with the show, though usually it's more often because it's really, really important. That being said, we really have nothing, no emails, no nothing. Again, guys, I can't do anything in this segment unless you send me comments, so. You know, as far as regards to Armageddon 2000, you know, it was during a time where, like I said, I came back around 99, like fall of 99, so I'd been watching wrestling for about a year and 4 months. I had returned to watching wrestling. And, you know, it was a very interesting year. Your changes were about abound. And, you know, WWE had turned the tables on WCW and were kicking their ass. And you know, it's very funny. There are some good matches, and there are some, I don't want to say bad matches, but just average matches. And you know, it took me a while after watching this to really figure out what to think about this pay-per-view. There are some surprises in watching. In fact, I'm already started watching Armageddon 2003, which is going to be, 2002, which will be the next review, mind you. Usually I say that for the end, but I bring it up here because, you know, I think one of the great things watching pay-per-views that happened during the year 2000 is sometimes you forget just who was working for companies. As we'll get to in the review, there's a particular match that features a wrestler where I'm like, I forgot about you. I.e., it's a wrestler who is wrestling with the company, but wasn't wrestling with the WWE for a long period of time. He was there in like 2000, I think maybe 2001, left for another company, and then came back around, I want to say, what, 2008? He came back? I can't remember. And I don't have the notes in front of me. I'll look that up during break. Anyhow, I'll just say we get to the review proper, because obviously I'm stalling for time as I let the music play out. But anyways, so Armageddon 2000, which took place on December 10th, 2000, hence why it's Armageddon 2000, with an attendance of 14,920 in the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center in Birmingham, Alabama. This is apparently the only WWE pay-per-view to have been held in the state of Alabama. It has the tagline of, "Lord, I'm coming home to you." Your co-commentators will be Jim Ross and the King, Jerry Lawler. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Armageddon 2000. As usual, we'll start off by talking about the dark match, the Sunday Night Heat match, which, of course, I didn't watch. Hopefully soon I will be able to watch it. I do hear that they're going to be showing Sunday Night Heat, or adding Sunday Night Heat episodes to the network, or at least that's what I heard. I could have been wrong. Maybe it was just part of that 12 Days of Griffin thing. But I remember hearing that they were going to add it to, or at least I read an article somewhere that they were going to be adding the Heat. So hopefully soon I'll be able to talk about Sunday Night Heat matches. But alas, this is one I did not get to see. Scotty Too Hotty versus D'Lo Brown. You know what? Considering the wrestlers and how much I do enjoy both of them, because I loved me some D'Lo Brown, and Scotty Too Hotty was always entertaining. It was more than likely probably sort of the usual WWE mid-carders entertaining match. You know, you had two fun characters there. Oh, by the way, I loved D'Lo Brown's theme song. Look at the real deal now. Woo! I remember when I first when I started watching wrestling, they came out with, I think it was like the WWF, the soundtrack. It's under volume 3 or 4. It had like D'Lo Brown and The Rock's new theme and Mankind's theme and Triple H's theme, Big Show, Chris Jericho's. I had Mark Henry's theme on there. I'm trying to remember who else was on there. Vince McMahon's theme was on there. But bar none, the theme I would listen to the most was D'Lo's. I just loved it for some reason. I just thought it was awesome. I think it also had the Undertaker's theme, like an old theme on there. Yeah, like his corporate ministry theme. Anyways, the first match officially that we're going to be reviewing here is a 6-person intergender elimination tag team match between the Radicals, featuring Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, and Eddie Guerrero, versus Team Extreme of Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, and Lita. Now, mind you, the storyline going into this, which, again, WWE did a great job of previewing, because I kind of remember this, I kind of don't, but the storyline was, a couple weeks earlier, Dean Malenko had defeated Lita in an intergender match, and basically won the right to have a date with her, even though, and he was married. So they were basically showcasing he's very much a sleazeball. And he tried to seduce her into bed, which, of course, Lita countered with the help of the Hardys, and they beat him up in a hotel room, leading to this match. This was a really good opening match. Very entertaining. Very fluid, and yet very fast-paced. Each elimination felt like it worked. You know, the first elimination is Eddie Guerrero goes for the Hurricane Rana, misses, and then... Or top rope Hurricane Rana, mind you. And then Jeff Hardy hits the Swanton, eliminates him. Saturn with the Death Valley Driver, which, you know, that harkens back to his, the Eliminators tag team days. I know he used it, like, in WCW, but it's like, that feels more like the Eliminators version there. Matt Hardy hitting the Twist of Fate. Dean Malenko, of course, ultimately getting the win. He rolls up Matt Hardy, and then Sam and Lita, and of course, taking advantage of being a superior wrestler. Unfortunately, I think the one thing criticism is that I wish they would have played it more that he was just a superior wrestler, and they did, but they also kind of played up the, you know, well, of course he's defeating her, he's a man, she's a woman part, which they would get better at, I think. In at least this part of WWE's history. Not that they vouched on that, but again, the fact that he was a superior wrestler was focused on more. I wish it had been focused on more, though. That statement didn't make any sense, but I think you got what I meant. But either way, it's a very entertaining match at 8 minutes, 4 seconds. And you know what? It got the crowd into it. You know, you had... Of course, Team Extreme, which everybody loved. So right off the bat, you have a team everybody loves. And of course, the Radicals, which were a great heel team and heel faction at the time. Our next match was for the WWF European Championship. And it was Sir William Regal, the WWF European Champion, versus hometown hero, Hardcore Holly. Now, I like this match. You know, there's different ways to look at different matches. You know, Team Extreme, the Radicals, that's a tag team match, is going to have a completely different flow than a singles match. And of course, this being a, you know, that's a different flow from a main event match because this is a mid-card match, and so on, which I think you understand. I really enjoyed this match. Even though it was only 5 minutes, they put on a great show. It didn't feel like 5 minutes. It felt like this was a 10-minute match, but in that good way, where a lot more happened, and you felt you got more bang for your buck than you really did. I thought Hardcore Holly and Will and Regal had great chemistry in the match, and I really enjoyed it. It's not a 5 or 4 star, but it's definitely a 3.5 star match. But probably more of a 3-star match only because of the ending. Which, again, this was a match that continued or started a storyline as the match ends with Raven coming in and hitting the Ebb and Flow DDT on Hardcore Holly, costing him the title. Obviously, the starting storyline between him and Hardcore Holly. Again, I'd have to go back and watch that era to watch the storyline. I remember the storyline. I just can't remember the storyline. I know it. In other words, I knew it happened. I just don't really remember it. But still, it was a very entertaining match for the 5 minutes we got. And of course, you're still your WWF European Champion, Sir William Regal. Our next match features a group that I've not seen in a long, long, long time. That, of course, being Right to Censor, as Val Venus, the apparently reformed conservative former porn star, with the women's champion Ivory, versus China. Because there is nothing finer than China, as Mick Foley would say. Or sort of say. You get my point. Anyways, moving on, before I start talking about her porn career. I went down that road. Anyways, it's an intergender match. Again, another about 5 minute match. A little over, actually, 5 minutes. Still very entertaining. You know, China. You know what? No, I made mention as a joke, but let's actually talk about it for a second. It is a damn shame that they won't talk about China because she's in porn. It really is, and it personally pisses me off. I mean, they talked about her in the Raw's, the Monday Night Wars episode when they talked about the women and the divas. But at the same point in time, I wish they would talk about her more because, you know, like, for instance, in current time when they're doing a package, you know, China was the first woman to be in the Rumble. Not the Glamazon Beth Phoenix. And I like Beth Phoenix. She was a great women's wrestler. But China was the first. But now, like, when you go to the Royal Rumble, or as the Royal Rumble is coming up, I fully expect when that package is shown for them to just show Beth Phoenix being a woman in the Rumble and eliminating somebody. Because, you know, China now does porn. That pisses me off. This is why people talk about and hate Linda McMahon's political career. Regardless of whether the company is doing it or not for her political career, though it looks very obvious that they are, or whatever reason they're doing it for, it's pissing us off. Because, so, let me get this straight. You're basically putting China in the same realm as Chris Benoit, another thing I disagree with. It's a whole different story. In fact, we'll probably talk more about that next episode and on a Rumble that we will be talking about next month. So I want to save that discussion for another day. So let me get this straight. You're basically treating China as if she killed her own family. Because she now is in a job where she strips off her clothes and has sex in movies for people's enjoyment. That is wrong, and you know, I mean, screw saying curse words and sounding angry. That's just wrong. It's wrong. I personally don't get why showcasing her on television, you know, says you would endorse porn or anything she does in her private life. Because it doesn't. Basically, what it is that they're afraid some kid is going to look up information about her and see what she does now, and, you know, they're going to get caught searching for it on the internet or ask their parents about it, and of course, because today's parents are, you know, have no responsibility in them whatsoever, and every parent these days seems to let their child walk right all over them and never wants to do any actual parenting. You know, instead of talking to them or, you know, saying it simply, as my mother would say when I asked about mature things, is, you're not old enough to understand, and that's the end of the conversation. You know, they sit there and they blame the WWE, we're not letting you watch wrestling ever again, or threaten to. And I'm sorry to go off on a rant on this, because this was a really good match. You know, they told a great story. They had this great story going where, you know, Right to Censor had issues with China because she had, this past year, or to the past year of this pay-per-view, posed in Playboy. And I can't remember, I believe it had came out already. Of course, there was a storyline that led to the breakup between him, I really called China him. Insert joke here. Matty J and TWK. But no, but she had broken up with Eddie over her posing. Of course, we saw them, of course, dating before because we reviewed Backlash 2000 last year. Or should I say last June, actually. So we saw elements of that storyline there. But this was a really good match. Great back and forth. There was some great chemistry between Val Venus and Chyna. You know, we saw the money shot. Which, again, it's always good seeing Val Venus do the money shot. Of course, the ending comes. Great heel heat on Ivory as she ultimately leads the costing side of the match as she interferes. Chyna chases her around the ring. They come back into the ring. Of course, Val Venus catches her and hits her with a powerbomb for the victory. That being said, you know, but again, it's just a solid match. And of course, we can't talk about Chyna anymore. And you have a company that won't talk about her because now she does porn. And we can't talk about that anymore. Or since we can't talk about her anymore because she does. It's like. I find it funny that in an era where we're so gung-ho about women's equal rights, that we're all for women having equal rights unless they've laid on their back and have somebody, you know, thrust into them for money. Then they don't deserve equal rights because they've now done something horrible. You know. I'm going to stop my rant before I piss people off like Raven did that one ECW crowd. Because it's a very sensitive subject to me. Anybody who knows me. I don't want to get too political here. I just... It's hypocrisy. I hate it. Let's move on. I'm moving on because if I go into this, we're going to be here all night. And I'm dead serious about that. In particular, I really want to get to the next match as well because, goddamn, I love the next match. I forgot about this match. Understand, I didn't buy pay-per-views at this time, so for, like, a lot of these pay-per-views, early 2000s, my first time actually getting to watch the pay-per-views. Though some of them, I remember, I would listen to the audio because I would turn on. It was during a time where they didn't have the, you know, now playing. They would actually... If you didn't buy the pay-per-view, all they did was, like, fuzz to the screen, you know. And of course, those of us who were alive then remember back in the day, you know, whether it be the porno channel or the pay-per-view channel, you would just listen to the audio. You know, I'm sure some of us remember doing that. And that's something I did with, you know, occasionally you'd get a picture. So for some pay-per-views, I think I remember them because I would watch the pay-per-views that way. Or I may have gone over to somebody's house and seen it or whatever. But for the most part, I didn't buy the pay-per-views. And I really didn't buy this one. Of course, you know, you saw all the screenshots the next night of what happened at Hell in a Cell. So, I've not seen Chris Jericho versus Kane in a Last Man Standing match. This actually being the second longest match of the night. God damn, I love this match. This was a great match. Kane and Chris Jericho told a great story through the match. You know, Chris Jericho really showing why he was the Ayatollah of rock and roll and showing that he was really starting to gain his footing in the WWE. You know, those who remember Chris Jericho and by his own admission, especially if you watch that Monday Night Wars episode, he talks about, you know, him taking a while to gain his footing in the WWE. And here you see him really starting to gain that. And they told a great story. I like the ending. You know, if I don't complain about John Cena pushing something on freaking Bray Wyatt, I'm not going to complain here about Chris Jericho pushing a wall of, they're not bins. They're, I want to call them kegs. Onto Kane. I'll probably look to see if they have, they call them barrels, excuse me. I knew there's another word they were using. The barrels are like metal barrels, you know, kind of like the oil, they look like oil drums actually, but they call them barrels, but they're metal barrels. and there's this big wall of fused metal barrels together that form this big wall as part of the set. And Jericho, they're fighting, and Jericho counters, I think, like a chokeslam or something. And Kane goes to a table, and he goes over. He sees Kane trying to get up, and he pushes this wall of metal barrels over and traps Kane underneath so he can't get up. I thought it worked, and I liked it, and it made, you know, it made Kane look strong, it made Jericho look strong, and it was just an entertaining match. And I think that it was really a coming out party for Jericho at the time, to really showcase him getting his footing in the WWE. So just a solid match, and definitely, it's a match I think is worth watching this pay-per-view for. Our next match is a fatal four-way match for the WWF Tag Team Championship. You have Edge and Christian versus the Dudley Boys versus the current WWF Tag Team Champions of Right to Censor of Bull Buchanan and the Good Father. Poor, poor Godfather. Not because he sucked at this time and that it was a bad character. It was a great storyline. It's just like, oh man, the whole train's in the station. I want to see the whole train. And of course, our last team of Road Dogg and his partner, Kay Quick. Now, of course, in me watching this, I'm like, this guy looks very familiar. You know, he kind of looks like a very, very young version of R-Truth. I wonder if they're related. They even have the same moveset. And same gimmick. Oh, shit, that's right. That's because this is fucking R-Truth. Because he debuted in WWE and came up through the system as K-Quick. And then joined Road Dogg before he left for TNA with Road Dogg. Or I can't remember if he went first and then Road Dogg followed or whatever. But I certainly remember the tag team that him and Road Dogg had in TNA. Because that's one of the things that did have me watching TNA early in its years was that tag team. Because they were enjoyable. Along with the other tag teams. Like the Primetime Players and, you know, America's Most Wanted. Oh, God, that cage match. You know what? One time I got to do that pay-per-view. Because I got to find out when that pay-per-view is and, review that. Because I think that pay-per-view is ruined just worth for that match. Anyways, R-Truth, who would, you know, lead the company, come back in 2008. And is, of course, still with the WWE. I completely forgot about him being with the company early on. I didn't even remember he had any pay-per-view matches, mind you. Of course, he, even doing the research, he actually did win the hardcore title at one point. So it was fun, actually, to watch his early character in the WWE here. As it always is to see, you know, somebody who becomes more famous or becomes known for another character or gimmick. Not that this is really a different gimmick, it's just that they've really changed the name, and younger people probably know him more as R-Truth than they will ever know him as K-Quick. But it's interesting to see him in the match. As for the match itself, it was a very solid match. You know, of course, Edge and Christian and the Dudley Boys had great chemistry, as they always do. Right to Censor did a good job as the heavies in the match. And of course, Road Dogg and K-Quick were entertaining. Of course, definitely a moment of the night, or at least a favorite moment of mine, and a moment of this match was, there's a point where both Bubba and Road Dogg are in a ring and they're fighting Buchanan the Good Father, and they swing off the ropes and then they hit him with a jab, because both wrestlers use the jab, and they hit the jab, and the jab, and the jab, and then they both start shake, rattling, rolling, and then they look at each other, and they go after each other and hitting each other with a clothesline. It was just a great little comedic moment, but it's like, that's great little storytelling there. You know, here's the moves that both these wrestlers do that are similar, and they share it. And, you know, the funny thing about it is, in the 2002 pay-per-view that I'll be reviewing next episode, we have the same spot! in another fatal four-way tag team championship match. Of course, that was an elimination. Well, we'll get to that next week. I just find that funny. But I thought all four teams did a good job. Edge and Christian ultimately get the win. Again, apparently Edge is the legal man. Referee's dealing with everything that's going on outside. Christian hits the Unpredator prettier on Bubba, and Edge gets the win. And the most awesomest tag team around is your new WWF Tag Team Champions. So, solid tag team match featuring four teams. Not as much of a clusterfuck as it could have been. Good chemistry and solid working by Right to Censor, Road Dogg, and Kenny Quick. Just a very enjoyable match. Our next match is Chris Benoit versus the WWF Intercontinental Champion Billy Gunn for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Of course, this features the botch of the night by who else? Billy Gunn. At least in my mind, it's the most visible botch. But I also give him credit that they, as we'll talk about, that they worked their way around it to make it feel like, you know, I've talked before, like, you can, when you see a botch, there's two things you can do. You can either let it affect you and you'll repeat the move or whatever and it stops the momentum of the match, or you can use the botch to your advantage to tell a story and not let it affect you, as we talked about before. The botch in question is, again, great storytelling. Chris Benoit is working on Billy Gunn's leg. He's working on the leg throughout the match. Great psychology that he's switching up his area of attack, because he usually goes for the arm to set up the crossface, which Billy Gunn was probably prepared for, and instead Benoit goes after the legs. And throughout the match, you know, Billy Gunn is having problems standing. Great selling by Billy Gunn on that standpoint. So the botch comes in question where Benoit comes out of the corner, and if you remember, Billy Gunn would have this sort of tilt-whirl slam that he would do. And he goes for it, but messes up, and Benoit slips, and he has a soft landing as, you know, Gunn's leg buckle. It was obviously a botch, but the thing that's great about it, and of course, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler did a great job sort of also telling the story well of, like, is that they sold it that that happened because of all the damage to Billy Gunn's legs by Chris Benoit. So even though it's the most, it's a visible botch, they do a great job of using that botch to tell a story. So it's not a, certainly you could hear some "you fucked up" chants in there, obviously from ECW fans, but it's not so much of a fuck up than you would think. It's visible, but it doesn't hurt the momentum of the match. And this was definitely, it's hard to watch now, especially being that I am a fan of Chris Benoit. And I have no problem saying that. I am a fan of Chris Benoit, the wrestler. We'll talk that, like I said, we'll talk about that story on another day. I was certainly a fan of Chris Benoit at the time because I remember watching him in WCW and really liking him as a wrestler in WCW. It was a shame he never got a title opportunity in WCW. And, yeah. So I enjoyed him getting to win with the crippled crossface. And, of course, your new WWF Intercontinental Champion, Chris Benoit. Now, our next match, you know, for those who complain, you know, like, how Divas matches are all piss breaks and they're not given any time. Yeah, this next match, this women's championship match between the WWF Women's Champion Ivory versus Trish Stratus and Molly Holly. Yeah, they're only given about 2 minutes 13 seconds. But, you know, one thing I actually find interesting is, for all the complaining everybody does about the Divas match not being long, this match didn't feel like it was 2 minutes and 13 seconds. This match felt like it was 5 minutes. Because of the amount of storytelling and just how fast-paced it was. So that shows you can have a short amount of time and put a lot into that time. So even though it's a short match, it felt fast and furious. And of course, Ivory picking up a good chunk of heel heat, doing a great heel maneuver of stealing the win. I believe pinning Trish Stratus by Molly Holly doing a powerbomb and her throwing her out. Let me just double check that. Double suplex or count. I'm blanking on how she won. I believe it's like Molly Holly hits a power bomb and then she gets thrown out of the ring, and Ivory pins Trish Stratus for the win. Of course, there was also a feud going on between Trish Stratus and Molly Holly, between and Crash at the time, or is it between Molly Holly and Trish Stratus? I bring that up because there is this fun moment to where, you know, TNA, Test and Albert come out to, you know, beat up on Molly and beat up on Crash. But Crash had bought himself some insurance. Some Aculite insurance. Oh, I love the APA. That made me feel so... Yeah, it made me feel so good. What I'm trying to get to is, even though the match is 2 minutes and 13 seconds, there's so much story and there's so much stuff that happened before and after the match that, you know, give them credit. They told a good story. They wrestled a good match. And you know what? It was very entertaining front to back, before and after, and during. So, I don't know where I was going to go with that about today's matches, but maybe they should look back at this match and see what they did on how to tell stories. Because I really enjoyed this one just from the pay-per-view match alone. Now, that brings us to our final match of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, in a Hell in a Cell match, we have the WWF Champion Kurt Angle defending against Triple H, Rikishi, The Undertaker, The People's Champion, The Rock, and of course, the baddest SOB and slash redneck this side of the Mississippi. Ladies and gentlemen, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now, there's so many storylines that permeate this match. Mind you, throughout the entire pay-per-view, they step away to talk with like the competitors. There's one where they're doing an interview like early in the day with Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell, and he's bringing up like the past. At this point, I believe there had only been four Hell in a Cells. So surprisingly, they don't bring up the one that happened at WrestleMania where freaking Undertaker choked, or as they had Boss Man hanging from the top of it. But yeah, you know, really the three big of the four, the three big ones I remember were the first one with Shawn Michaels, the second one with Mick Foley that we reviewed, King of the Ring 98. Oh my God. I stop now before I start gushing, and you know, then again, I shouldn't worry. After NXT our evolution, I don't have any more jizz left to jizz. but I'll find if I just had a thought of you, because I know how we joke on the WrestleCast about that stuff. Obviously, joking better. I can only imagine somebody who doesn't listen to the WrestleCast, who maybe listened to another show, turning this one on and being the first one hearing that joke. Oh my God! But then again, I know my audience, and they're more than likely I'll get the joke. Anyways, after peeling back that fourth wall. But where was I? Oh yeah, Undertaker talking about, you know, his match with Shawn Michaels, his match with Mick Foley, Triple H, of course, throughout the night. This is during a time when Mick Foley was commissioner. And, you know, Vince, of course, is apparently, this whole storyline, he's divorcing his wife, and he's trying to gain control, and he's trying to stop the match, of course. He doesn't succeed. Of course, Stephanie's trying to get the match stopped to protect Triple H, but Triple H's like, I'll go through hell and high water. I will bleed all over the place to get that title. Kurt Angle cuts a really good promo. He's the first one interviewed. Rikishi does a good promo. Of course, the whole storyline of, you know, yeah, I mean, you had the rivalry between Triple H and The Rock that happened all year. Kurt Angle that had been inserted into it as, you know, winning the championship. Of course, storyline of Stone Cold Steve Austin coming back. I believe that late that summer. And, of course, revealing that it was Rikishi who had ran him over a year earlier on a storyline that was meant to, you know, it was a kayfabe storyline of him getting ran over as he was going in surgery to fix something else. I think everybody knows by now that storyline. But Rikishi, of course, ran over Steve Austin as part of a plan with Triple H to keep Austin out of the title picture. So many storylines. Of course, Undertaker being a badass and, of course, being so deadly in the Hell in a Cell as it's his devil's playground and everything. So there's just so much hype for this match and so much preparation, and WWE did a great job. And you know, here's the thing, they did not disappoint. Is it better than the other Hell in a Cell matches? No, I think Hell in a Cell was one of those matches that's best made for the ending of a rivalry or the ending of a feud or between two wrestlers, or if at most a tag team. You know, you look at Mick Foley versus Taker, Undertaker versus Triple H at WrestleMania 29. Or it should be at 28, excuse me. You look at Triple H versus Shawn Michaels. It's great at ending a feud in those ways. But that being said, this match was entertaining from front to back. It was fun. It was the best wrestlers in the industry today at their best. You know, Triple H was great at what he did. Stone Cold Steve Austin, I love the way he gets the match. You know, Angle's on, he's not going into the cell, he's waiting on the outside, and all the wrestlers are passing by. Here comes Stone Cold. Stone Cold's walking like he doesn't notice Austin, and boom, he goes after Austin goes after Angle like quick as a cat and starts like beating the living tar out of him and throws him in the cell. And of course the match had already started. I think all the wrestlers did a good job, though, at least for a large majority of the match, it seemed like Taker and Rikishi were just pounding on people on the outside of the ring. They had their moments, you know, Rikishi in particular had his moments inside the ring of getting beaten up, but Taker seemed to be just doing a lot of damage, like throwing people into the cage and stuff, and throwing ham hocks and things like that. So for that first part, while there were some entertaining parts and people like, you know, of course, can't forget Austin literally taking Triple H's face and ringing it around the cage, all of the way around the cage. That was a moment. But the match really didn't start getting really interesting until Mr. McMahon comes out with a truck and he's trying to, with the plan of taking down the cage. He first starts with the door that he eliminates. He's trying to take down the wall when Mick Foley comes out and he gets security to haul them away. You know, he beats up on Patterson and, I want to blink on his name. I should remember his name. I used to see his workshop in Tampa all the time. I'm completely blanking, but the Stooges. Eliminates the Stooges. Mr. McMahon gets hauled off by security. Truck gets left there, and of course, the wrestlers now have an exit of their cage. And of course they start battling in the entranceway. Just some great spots. Of course, monkey flip of Triple H onto a car. Because they had these like broken down cars in the entranceway to represent Armageddon. But the one big one I love is, you know, Austin's beating the tar out of Triple H. They're on a car and he grabs the boom camera. Because there's a boom camera, grabs it, like, hello! And then, like, drills back and wheel and just slams it into Triple H. Into, like, his thigh slash gut. And it's like, oh, that was a moment. Of course, this all eventually leads to a couple wrestlers going on top of the cage. Because you can't have a hell. After Foley and Taker, you couldn't have a Hell in a Cell where nobody goes to the top of the cage. And you have some great... And I love that he didn't do the spot, which everybody remembers right away. There's a build-up to it, because they have a couple wrestlers teeing on the edge. They both tease them getting thrown off, and there's a couple that are hanging onto the, like, the corner end, and they tease them losing their grip and falling off. As Triple H and Angle are up there, and they... You know... I want to say Austin is there, and, you know, they beat the hell out of each other. Of course... At some point, Rikishi gets up there. How Rikishi is able to climb there, I think it's just shows his athleticism. Because goddamn, he was up there. Of course, that leads to, you know, him and Undertaker battling back and forth. And eventually, Undertaker hits him. And at the end of the cage, where the entrance is, of course, where the truck is, that's obviously been set with an airbag. I think anybody who sees it can see it, that it was set up for a fall. At the time, I think anybody watching it probably would have been so immersed in the match that you didn't see it. But if you'd seen it a million times, you at some point you realize, oh, wait, there's something there to protect his fall. But still, he sells the hell out of that when it happens. It can't be denied, the moment of the night. Taker, he has... a wobbly Rikishi, who's hazy, swallowed by the throat, and they call it a chokeslam. It's not so much a chokeslam, but he literally, like, throws Rikishi off, and he lands in the back of the bed of the truck. It's like, goddamn. Why? It's still a moment. It's something that definitely was a signature of this match, as it's become. And, of course... I love the fast-paced sense of the ending of between Triple H, Austin, Rock, and they're all throwing finishers at each other and everything. And, Austin starts stunning everybody. He stuns The Rock, stuns Triple H. But, of course, as he's stunning Triple H, he doesn't see Angle throw, like, a fingertip on The Rock, and he ends up getting the pin, and Angle escapes with the championship. It was just... You know what? I was afraid that, especially with the hype that they were doing throughout the pay-per-view, since this was my first time watching this match, that it, in particular, being such a fan of Taker versus Mankind, that it wouldn't live up to expectations. But I have to say, this match definitely lived up to expectations. It's not better by any means than Taker, Mankind, and I mean, but I can definitely see this being definitely a top 10 Hell in a Cell match of all the Hell in Cells that had happened. It's a very entertaining match from front to back. They did a great job hyping it. There was a lot of good storylines told in it. And of course, you had all of WWE's best main eventers in one place, at one time, at their very best. So, a very entertaining match and definitely worth the price of admission for a pay-per-view, particularly at the time. So, those are all the matches. Of course, we have our final talkabouts, our final comments, best three matches, best three moments. Number three, Austin with the camera, the boom camera on Triple H. I mean, I could probably do all three from this match, but only two will do. But that was definitely one. I have to say, I love the whole shake, rattle, and roll moment between Road Dogg and Bubba Ray on Bull Buchanan and Godfather. That was very entertaining. And last but not least, I didn't initially want to give it to them, but I'm like, you know what? It's such a signature moment, it has to be said. The choke slam of Rikishi by the Undertaker off the top of the cell into the bed of the truck. And not because of the violence of the act, but because of the build-up. The build-up is like, oh no, this can't happen, it can't be, and it happens. Like, oh my god. The build-up to the moment is what sells it. And damn, gotta give it up to Rikishi for selling that, because when he goes into the bed of that truck, he does not move for the rest of that pay-per-view. You know, that is some hardcore selling. And he did a great job at it. So, on to my top three matches. Number three, the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match. Was really well done. I enjoyed it. Number two is the Hell in a Cell match. Definitely a signature main event. Definitely paid off the hype and everything of the pay-per-view. It did everything right. And it, you know, was a very entertaining match. The thing is, it's still a clusterfuck. That's the one thing I didn't say. It is still a clusterfuck. That's why my number one match goes to Chris Jericho and Kane. You know, front to back, very entertaining match. Had a great ending. Made both wrestlers look immensely strong. And, you know, it was a surprise of the night. It's the type of match that could main event a pay-per-view. And that's the thing I like, is that you really had these two matches that could have a main event at pay-per-view. With the Hell in a Cell and with Jericho versus Kane in the Last Man Standing match. Just solid matches front to back, but I definitely like Jericho versus Kane, Last Man Standing, better than I liked Hell in a Cell. So those are my views for Armageddon 2000. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Stitcher and on our Facebook account. Now, I'll promise you, I'm going to get to work on starting to post episodes on Stitcher starting tomorrow, or as of this recording, starting tomorrow. It may take a while to get everything up. I'm probably going to hopefully do a couple a day. Either way, I need to get better at that. That being said, you can find episodes at www.stitcher.com. You can also, and by searching for Absolution Network at Stitcher. Of course, you can always go to Facebook, leave us comments by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network, which CMG's Wrestling Reviews is a part of. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're there, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that you can find on the site. That, of course, includes Tom's Prerogative, Intergalactic Graphic Review, Tom's Top 10, along with Shin Tiger Curls, wrestling and anime videos, and, of course, John Ramos' Toku videos with his new series, Toku Apocalypse. Check it out. It's great stuff. Also, check out my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network with Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Check those stuff out soon. And, of course, while you're there, check out our sidebar and all our friends on the sidebar of the site. Of any of the sites, this, of course, includes Maddie J and TWK and the WrestleCast on RVT Entertainment. Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor, her doing From Crisis to Crisis. And, of course, my good friend Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles. Steven Schleicher in the Major Spoilers and Critical Hit Podcast, and of course, my good friend Scott Gardner and the Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many others. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, the end is near once again, and hell has no fury like a friendship scorned, as we review the night that Shawn Michaels and Triple H entered three stages of hell. Ladies and gentlemen, next episode we review Armageddon 2002. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CMG. I'm the best shoe in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negativity. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among the feet, one people are down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but just remove.